Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Check out tens of thousands of technical articles on our new knowledge hub on farmersjournal.ie.
Now, the steady production and supply of food has been one part of daily life that hasn't been overly hampered by the pandemic. We've got back to shopping for groceries as well and cooking at home at the expense, of course, of the food on the run, food service and restaurant sectors. That's certainly one change that has happened. But the future of food production globally does remain unclear, pandemic or not. Climate change, food waste, drought, a fast-growing world population, changing diets, land shortage and new technology are all challenges and opportunities as well, you could say, facing food production over the coming decades. Now, Aidan Connolly is an author and CEO of Cainthus, an Irish-based agri-tech company, and involves a lot of his time in researching the future of farming and food production globally. And he joins us this morning live from the United States. Aidan, a very good morning to you. I know you do a lot of future planning and have written extensively about the future of farming and food. And I'm just wondering, has this global pandemic, has it had much of a seismic impact on global food production? And has it shunted us consumers in terms of how we shop and how we consume food into the future?
Yes, good morning, Damien. Definitely it has. I think anybody who consumes food, which is all of us, is very familiar with the fact that we've seen huge changes in how we buy food, in where we consume food. And of course, at farm level, we're seeing huge changes as well. The pandemic certainly has had a massive impact.
The click and go is one thing that most of us never did before, but we're all at it now. So is that something that has moved, come forward maybe about 10 years?
Yeah, somebody describes that we had gone through a vortex and we've shifted to the year 2030 in the space of about 10 weeks or maybe 10 months. And I think you see that just very, very clearly. Everybody's practices, everybody's ways of the way that we find and purchase have just changed tremendously. And that's something that we're seeing on a global scale. So, yeah, I think click and go, I think home delivery, I think the willingness to purchase food online has been completely transformed by this pandemic.
What are some of the other game changers we have to look forward to in the way we farm, the way we buy, and the way we consume food?
I suppose when I talk to farmers around the world, particularly Europe and the US, you see that the sales of robots have gone through the roof. So robots for milking cows have become a huge issue. Labor on farm in general is a huge issue, even to the daily tasks of pushing feed up, you know, constantly making sure the feed is available for the cows or for animals, increasingly being done by robots as well. We also see the use of sensors. So that would be Fitbits for animals, again, in particular for cows and horses, but to a lesser degree for pigs. And we're seeing the use of all sorts of technologies from blockchain, 3D printing. All of these technologies are all just being accelerated by the need to rethink how food is being produced.
I'll come back to the Fitbits and the cows in a moment, but I want to ask you a little bit about vertical farming. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, very fascinating. I just wrote something on my LinkedIn blog there just about 3 weeks ago. It sounds like the sort of thing that should change the way food is produced. Unfortunately, the costs are extremely high. What I found was that these vertical farms are where you grow food in a building, in a city, so it's local, so it's nearby. You can go for soilless production so that you actually save on soil. You don't need to use pesticides. You don't need to use any control of infections in the system. And you also reduce the need for water. But of course, the buildings themselves are extremely expensive to build and maintain. And the cost of energy is enormous. So it's something that promises a lot. And there is a huge amount of money pouring into it. But as of yet, I don't think it's ready to take on, let's say, conventional farming.
I suppose when it comes to food production, where we try and solve one problem, another one is created, and vertical farming certainly sounds like that indeed. We waste a third of the food that's produced in the world in various different ways. Some of it's never consumed, some of it goes out of date, some of it we don't eat and we throw away. It's a lot of food to be wasting at a time when land for growing food is becoming more scarce. Can precision farming and maybe 3D printing, could that help reduce the amount of food waste?
No question. Understanding precisely what our plants require for nutrition, understanding precisely what animals need for nutrition, and not least understanding what we ourselves need for food and nutrition is clearly part of the future. I'm excited by some of the things I see. Even when I've been back in Dublin, I saw that my friends at the Bretzel Bakery are using 3D printers to avail of the food waste from the bakery to see can they produce other things. And I think it's that sort of creativity that fortunately, I don't want to say fortunately COVID, but during the current, let's say, challenges, people are really thinking about new ways of doing things. And I think we need more of that thinking.
A lot of people are moving towards a plant-based diet. Is that the way of the future? How fast is it growing, Aidan?
There's no question that people are increasingly engaged with alternatives to meat, milk and eggs. And we hear and see about it all the time. The actual progress in it is smaller than you'd imagine. And I think part of the challenge is that, are we moving from animal proteins to plant proteins, but ending up with food which is further processed? A lot of what's exciting in this area relates to the fact that the food increasingly tastes like meat, tastes like milk, tastes like eggs. And so basically the food chemistry and the food technology has improved. But when you feed it, when you look at the list of additives that go into some of these burgers and some of these substitutes, it makes you wonder how healthy they really are.
Well, a lot of us that are moving in that direction and, you know, are consuming the likes of clean meat, mock milk and fake eggs, as they're called, alongside other plant and seed-based produce. We're doing it in very good faith for very noble reasons, but it seems a little counterintuitive to go that direction if we're going to be eating, as you said, processed lab-grown food. So is it marketing genius?
Yeah, there, of course, there's a lot of marketing in it, but there's huge money coming in from some of the most famous Hollywood stars and indeed technology people pouring into this area, believing that this is the future. There's a big difference, however, in my mind, between what's grown in a laboratory, where in many cases we're actually feeding antibiotics into the system to try to keep it clean. That just doesn't seem to me to be a sensible way to replace what's grown in the countryside. In the case of these proteins that are taken from vegetables, such as soy, etc., primarily in order to make them taste and look like meat, we just have to use a lot of other stuff. And I think at a stage where we're trying to move away from that and get people to eat whole food, single ingredients, I don't think that this is something that the consumer is going to accept once they move beyond some of the marketing hype.
Yeah. Now, I should point out at this time that your company, Kainthos, is involved in supplying, I suppose, and selling technology primarily to dairy farmers. So you don't want to see the death of dairy as such. However, you will be aware of the threat to climate, of methane emissions and all of that. But having said that, your company does provide technology in that area. Can we reduce emissions and maintain output on dairy and beef farms at current levels, Aidan? Is the technology there? Is the feeding alternatives, are they there as well to allow the continuation of meat and dairy production at the levels they're at, particularly in Europe?
Yeah, so I think, Damien, certainly my company and I myself are very interested in all types of technology. So whether that be with dairy or otherwise, it is a huge threat to the dairy industry, this conversation about climate change and the impact cows might have. However, when you start to look at the life cycle of the cow and you start to look at all of the inputs that a cow will eat and you realize those grasses, those forages, those fibers are taking up a lot of carbon, there actually is the potential, and you may have seen some of the studies, particularly from California, showing there is the potential for us to get towards carbon neutral. And maybe even a situation where we would pay farmers for taking carbon out of the environment, because the system itself, when you look beyond just the cow and you look at what the cow eats and the whole cycle, you realize that the system can be carbon neutral. So I think that that's where we're going. My company has a very specific application, which is really interesting, but it's about cameras and watching cows and then digitizing the pictures and then using artificial intelligence. But fundamentally or simply what it does is it allows you to make sure that the cows have food available, feed available to them all the time. And we're also looking at behaviors of the cows, such as how much time they spend lying down. That's really interesting because we found on farms, sometimes cows will be lying down for 10 hours and other cows lying down for 14 hours. An hour extra per day of lying down, you mightn't think when you look out at the cows in the field, an hour of extra lying down time will result in hugely better digestion, will result in them actually producing more milk, but more importantly, reducing their overall carbon footprint. So technologies like this are definitely part of where we're going.
Is seaweed the answer to the methane problem?
I'm very, very encouraged by what I see with seaweed with respect to reducing methane and carbon production. Some of the challenges are when we're investigating inside the cow to find out what's happening. This is primarily used in cows, fed to cows to reduce methane. Some of the compounds in it look like they might be toxic. That's how they impact, or that's how they have that impact in terms of reducing bacteria that produce methane in the stomach of a cow. And from that perspective, I would be a little concerned about where we're going with this. I think the science can improve, but I'm very sure that particularly from a European Union regulatory perspective, we could face some challenges with seaweed.
Okay, Aidan, we need to produce more food to feed a growing global population, which will reach about 9 billion by the year 2050. We have to do it in an environmentally and animal welfare friendly sort of way, with a dwindling land base. So is it inevitable, and I know that people will get very, very annoyed that we even mention this, but is it inevitable, and it's a controversial subject, that GM technology or genetically altering food growth, particularly when it comes to soya, for example, which goes into some of the plant-based foods you were mentioning earlier on, is it inevitable that that is a nettle that the EU in particular will have to grasp?
I think that genetically modified organisms, GMOs, definitely have grown, and outside of the EU, clearly the United States has been using them now for about 15 years, and frankly, we haven't seen much of an impact on people have mentioned the catastrophes that could occur with respect to human health. We just haven't seen them. But conversely, we are seeing technologies that are better than GMO come through, which are natural. And these are called CRISPR. I know CRISPR doesn't sound very natural, but actually it's an enzyme that exists in your body and allows you to repair your DNA if something goes wrong. And scientists are using this, particularly in Europe, and it looks like the European Union will be favorable to it because, of course, it's something which is already there. We're not introducing some transgenic or something that should not be in the system to start with. We're simply activating something that's there. And that has the power to do everything GMO can do in a natural form. So, yes, I would be optimistic that is, based on even the information from a couple of weeks ago, that is where we're going.
And Aidan, finally and briefly before we go then, when you consider all of the changes and the challenges and the opportunities that lie ahead, are there exciting times ahead for food producers and indeed consumers? Are we going to be fitter and healthier, and are we going to be fed and be able to be fed with fresh, nutritious food which will be grown by the farmer?
I do often wonder humorously whether Donald Rumsfeld was a farmer, because he talked about the known knowns and the unknown unknowns and the unknown unknown unknowns. So I think that we've had a tremendous number of unknown unknowns, and these technologies are allowing us to understand better, more precisely, exactly how we feed our animals, exactly how we grow our crops, and obviously exactly what we put in our own bodies. And I think that is our future. And that provides tremendous opportunities. You mentioned already food waste, more precision, and more importantly, better for the environment.
Well, Aidan, it's been fascinating chatting to you. Thanks very much for staying up late there on the east coast of the USA. You can go asleep now, but thanks very much for that. And that's Aidan Connolly there, CEO of Irish-based ag tech company Cainthus. And also, he has published a book called Plan Your Explosive Business Growth 2143.